Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone, and welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon, the podcast that loves you, the podcast with more celebrities than the inauguration. And that is true. I am your host, your groove mistress, and your spiritual advisor, Madame Perry. But you can call me Perry, Jennifer, Jen, JP. It's all good to me because I'm just glad I'm here and I'm glad that you're here. And somebody asked me recently about the genie bottle. Yeah, one of my first guests or first people I interviewed back when it was a blog, not a podcast, went back and told the world, I've been to Madame Perry's salon. It's like the inside of Jeannie's bottle. And so the word was out, and after that everybody came on and wanted their own special cushions and everything, and I make sure every guest has one here in the Jeannie bottle. Thank you so much to everybody. Boy, the number, I had some big stats last weekend, all last week, and thank you so much for listening, for subscribing on whatever podcast platform you prefer to enjoy your podcast and whatever way you prefer to enjoy them. Thank you so much, and for sharing them, for the nice reviews that you've left on Apple iTunes or Stitcher about how you enjoy the guest, whether it's somebody famous that you know or somebody you've never heard of, like an anthrozoologist that comes on or a NASA JPL expert, specialist. Yeah, still like it, and I appreciate that because I want to, I'm here to entertain. I'm here to provide information and entertainment for the people. Last week, and I told you I would give you the information. Was it last week? We had Wendy Moten, a singer up in Nashville, and she was headlined on a Grand Ole Opry special last Tuesday. Also, I was watching last night on YouTube, I watched a special on Bonnaroo, or something on Bonnaroo that was on YouTube. It had like a behind the scenes, and the show was Larry Graham, Billy Idol, but Wendy Moten and John Oates was in band. Wendy Moten was one of the singers on that, and she's great. So, yeah, I'm still sharing her website and information on how to get her music and find out where you can see her. Also, Marquis Michael DeBar was on here before. And, of course, you listen to him on Sirius XM on Little Steven's Underground in the mornings. And he's got a brand-new documentary out, which is what we were talking about. It's called Who Do You Want Me to Be? And I thought that first just applied to him as an actor. However, I didn't realize until I watched the documentary that he co-wrote the song with singer Holly Knight, Obsession, you know, that Who Do You Want Me to Be? So, yeah, so that was Michael DeBar, and he's still sharing things from Madame Perry Salon. So yeah, check out that documentary. Coming soon, we've also got Jen Lancaster. I am so excited. She's, I think, on her 13th, 14th, 15th book. The first one she wrote, I think it's about 12 years ago, Bitter as the New Black, subtitled Or Why You Shouldn't Take Your Prada Bag to the Unemployment Office. After that was Bright Lights, Big Ass, Such a Pretty Fat. She's got such a great book. She's a funny, funny woman. So she'll be here, I think it's the 28th, to promote her newest book. Tonight, I have promised you that. People have, tonight, this guest, look, I don't often get all fangirl and tongue-tied with certain guests, but it's okay because this guest can just keep on going if I just lose my nerve and can't talk. He's good. He's good at that. Anyway, he's a hilarious man. He's been on The Tonight Show, Conan, Late Show with Letterman, Late Show with Seth Meyers, Late Show with James Corden. He's had his own Comedy Central Presents special. That's no small thing. He was on Last Comic Standing. He's got his first comedy album, which is called Vegan Mind Meld, was one of iTunes' top 10 comedy albums of the year. And his newest, AKA, has been submitted to be considered for a nomination for the Grammy. And several times on here, I have made predictions for guests that came true, like you will get a publisher, you will get this. I feel quite certain. And remember, I've done some palm reading at some pretty prestigious events, so I think so. But let me bring him in. He's sitting here in the genie bottle on a cushion. It's a little dim, but I think he's comfortable for his first time, hopefully the first of many, to Madame Perry Salon, comedian Mike Kaplan. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. That was, I don't think I need to say anything. You said it all. And but if you do get tongue-tied, my tongue is untied all the time. And I am happy to be here. I am comfortably sitting on a cushion.
Oh, good, good. You know, I first started listening to you many years ago. You'd be on Laugh USA, which is the channel that I listen to that keeps me from having the road rage other people suffer from. And you do have a style that is completely, inimitably your own, which is enchanting and enthralling in itself. So I want to know where you became a comedian, because I understand, because, I mean, you're a hilariously funny man, but I understand that at one point you were going to be a singer. That was your goal.
It's true. A singer hyphen songwriter. I feel like just when you, if you just say singer, then it sounds like you, like I took voice lessons in college, and I just wanted to be able to sing, quote unquote, better, or, you know, I mean, well, was not like the, that was like on the, that was my reach goal. But I had been writing songs since like mid high school, around age 15, 16, I started playing guitar. And I had been playing the violin since I was about four, kind of against my will. My parents were music teachers, and it was important to them that I love music, particularly my mother, I believe. So, like, I wasn't even really given the choice. My mom, I think, I don't remember this. My mom tells me that when I was four, she was like, "What musical instrument would you like to play? This one or this one? The violin or a different violin?" You know. And I was like, oh, well, I guess, you know, I trust these people who are, like, I love them. They are a supportive, caring family. I'm very fortunate. You know, I didn't have anything to compare to at the time, but I was just like, oh, sure, I guess I'll do the thing that you're offering, because you're in charge of, you know, my food supply, clothing, shelter, and such. And then I kind of felt tricked, because I did not like playing the violin, but it was sort of the way it was more a religious practice than religion even was in my house. Like, my mom, if I had, like, really just said, like, I don't want to get a bar mitzvah, I don't want to go to Hebrew school or Sunday school or temple at all, I think she wouldn't have made me. But when I did say, I don't want to learn how to play the violin anymore, she would have said, that's too bad, because you have to have, she's like, I have faith. You don't even have to have faith. I have faith that you are going to love music. And as it turned out, which sometimes happens, the thing that I hated that my parents made me do, I eventually was like, I do. Okay, I love it. And so when I started teaching myself guitar, and I didn't have to, and I didn't have to practice, I did. I played for hours a day, and I didn't call it practicing because it was fun. And I wrote songs, and some of them were funny, and I started playing them, you know, at talent shows and coffee houses, and eventually, like, in college and out around Boston where I was in college, and at summer camp just with my friends. And so that was what I loved. It was the first thing that sort of, like, I chose to do that I loved doing. I guess the only other thing that I chose to do at that point was write. Like, when I was a kid, I drew. Mm-hmm. And I was, like, a quote-unquote good artist. But then I kind of didn't get better, and so I stopped. And I probably didn't get better because I stopped, but I then started writing, like, a journal and poetry, and just kind of, which is now sort of the root of all of, you know, writing is how you get music, writing is how you get comedy, yeah. Writing is how you get so many artistic manifestations. And so,
okay.
Hello?
Hey, you kind of dropped out for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. What is the last thing that you heard?
Writing a journal and, yeah.
Oh, gotcha. I was writing, I kept a journal, I wrote poetry, and then writing essentially, you know, sort of went on to become like the source of all artistic, you know, manifestation in my life. Like comedy, my comedy starts from writing, my music starts from writing, but at the time it was songs. I just loved writing these songs. I loved performing them for friends. And then I had a, you know, a sense of delusional self-confidence that other people, like my friends, could like me and like my songs and like my music. And so, yeah, the first desired dream goal career for me was like a touring recording artist, singer, songwriter.
Ah. Wow. And tell me how that program went. How did you design the program? Touring, singer, songwriter.
Well, I mean, I don't even know if I knew how it was going to like look, kind of the same way. Here's a brief sort of roundabout analogy. I remember when I was 12 or 13, thinking like, I want to get married, but I've never kissed a girl, really even talked to a girl, never went on a date with a girl, other than, you know, I think I'd talk to the girls in my class, but I was like, how am I ever going to get married? And like, I'd never even taken like a step towards it. And I was 12, I was 13. Eventually I did get married and I got divorced. I took all the steps. And similarly, like before I'd even performed out in public, I was like, this is what I want to do. I have the image in my mind, or at least the feeling of the shape of what I imagined it to be. But then, I mean, what happened was I did start going out to like open mics around the city of Boston where I was living. And I found there's one place called Club Passim where they had an open mic, a music open mic, but you could do anything every Tuesday night. But then one place that I found was the Comedy Studio, a comedy club that I was like, can I play my funny songs there? And so little by little, you know, I would have all these sets all over the place where I would do songs and then sometimes talk in between the songs, which is what eventually would turn into jokes. And then I started writing jokes because I liked how the talking, getting a laugh reaction made me feel. So ultimately, I mean, I never did have the singer-songwriter career shape that I desired, but only because it sort of, I naturally, organically shifted into this other comedy direction where I learned like, oh, you write jokes, you go to open mics, you try things dozens of times, hundreds of times, thousands of times. Eventually, over the course of years, you build up an act, which probably is what people were doing with their musical careers as well. But I'd been like, I've had sort of like, I guess, a bottleneck, you know, of like I'd been writing songs and creating songs for so long, but I hadn't been performing them out, you know, for audiences much at all. So I was just like, I don't understand. I'm like, I've got all the songs. Where are the people to listen to them? But with comedy, I was starting from nothing. And I was like, oh, I guess I perform as nothing at an open mic. And then it sort of, you know, grew accordingly, like my experience level, my skill, my capacity, my ability to be funny, and then audiences responding to it.
And yeah, and audiences do respond to you. You're such a funny man, and your stuff, your material, it takes like a twist, almost kind of surreal, but not really surreal because it makes sense. You feel like it's going to a surreal corner, but it makes sense. But you always just stay dead on with it. I mean, you don't flinch, you don't back up, you're straight on. And you know, listen, but I've also watched videos where you're performing, and it's like, I keep thinking, Mike, you can see these people down the front. They can't even listen anymore. They're laughing. I can see the tears coming out of their eyes. It's like they're trying to keep up.
That's so nice.
Oh, last thing about Eddie Murphy. Mushrooms. It was about mushrooms.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I can assure you that there have been times throughout my comedy career that I probably have flinched, that I have backed down, that there have been audiences that would have wanted me to. But I mean, ultimately, I mean, it's sort of a, there's a give and take, an ebb and flow to how you, like, in the beginning, how you, like, learn to discover and create, like, you know, your version of whatever you're doing, whether it's comedy, music, other kinds of art. But certainly in the beginning, I had like a delusional self-confidence that like perhaps I would deliver things the same way I would now in some time and in some mm-hmm. some circumstances, but then the audiences wouldn't respond because I didn't know what I was doing, because I didn't really have I hadn't done anything yet. I hadn't really lived as much. I hadn't really self-reflected as much. I hadn't really even listened to the audience as much, which was sort of a double-edged sword of being helpful to be like, well, this is what I think is funny. This is what I'm going to say. And I don't, not that I don't care what you think, but I don't care what any one audience thinks. I do care maybe over the course of days, weeks, months, and years, or what an aggregate of audiences might think. I care what my audience thinks, like, and, but what is my audience, but the people who like what I do. I care very much what the people who like what I do think. I like it a lot.
That's good. Which brings me to a question. You were talking just now. Many years ago, I took a course in how to be a stand-up comic from a guy who was a corporate comedian, and he taught these classes. And most of the people in the group had no desire to be a comic. They just wanted to have more confidence when they had to speak, say, if they were an accountant, they had to give a talk at their business, you know, present some information or things like that. They just wanted to have more confidence. And my thing was, I had a television show on cable in Atlanta, but I wanted to have a band, but I didn't want to be the person who was stuck going, we'll play again when the drummer fixes a snare head. You know, I wanted to be able to work the crowd, like you know, like Tony Fields used to between songs or something.
Sure.
And so that's why I didn't want to be left, you know, just leave the people hanging there. And when we practiced, you know, he'd say, okay, we'd all go, like a bunch of us would go to one club. They'd say, you know, tape your act. We'd go to one place. Then maybe the next night we'd hit the open mic at another place, maybe in the next county or not even 20 miles away. And we play, and some places you're going to do the same material the same way. In one place, they love you, and the next one, if you're up there, if they let you stay up there long enough to bomb, you will. But otherwise, you know, they kind of rush you off. And that's got to be, to me, for somebody who does this as a career, you know, when you're testing out material or trying out in the beginning. So how did you, you know, how did you find, and how did you stick to what was true for you?
Well, the thing that, that's a good question, and I want to speak to like the idea that if somebody just wants to learn how to be confident, you know, in a specific situation, like here's an analogy that I was just thinking about. When I was like 21, I had a girlfriend in college, and over the summer we were apart, and I cheated on her. And before anything happened with this person, I had told my girlfriend, like, hey, I met this new person. She's really cool. She's like my friend. She's a new friend. She has a partner. Like, it's really, we're just like close friends now. And my girlfriend mm-hmm. was like, not totally cool. She was like jealous. And ultimately she was like, is anything going on? And I was like, no, nothing's going on. And nothing was at the time. And then, something was, and then my girlfriend broke up with me without even knowing that anything was happening. She was just like, no thanks. And then we almost got back together, because here's the lesson that I learned at that point was like, man, if I hadn't even told my girlfriend anything about this person, then she wouldn't have had any reason to suspect anything, and then we would have been happy together. So the lesson is, don't tell the truth. But then a couple months later, we're back in school, and she's like, I wanted to talk to you because I realized that I was unfair to you, because based on what you told me, I was jealous. I was uncertain with what was going on. But if nothing was going on, I trust you and I believe you. So maybe we'll get back together. But I want to double check, did anything happen? And at this point, now I'm like, okay, well, the lesson was don't tell the truth. But I honestly – I at that point I didn't want to start the rest of our relationship. I didn't want to restart said, I am sorry, like, when I told you that it was the truth, but something did happen, and I can't lie to you about it. And she said, she was like, I knew it. And then she started laughing, and then she started crying, and then we did not get back together. We are still friendly to this day, and I'm very grateful because I'm with now, and if not for everything that happened before, I would not be here now. But the lesson that I learned ultimately, I was like, well, why didn't I stick to my lesson? It was that not to not tell the truth, but to have the truth be something that I would be happy to share, that I'd want to share, that it's like, because that, you know, you hear all the things like, if you don't make things up, then you don't have to have a lot of stories to remember. Just like, have the truth be something that you're proud of, that you're happy with, that you want to share, that you can share, that you do share, especially with the people that you care about and that care about you. And so similarly, I think the best way to be confident is to have something to be confident about and in. Like, starting learning comedy by doing it or by taking a class, you might very well, like, your confidence might feel fake because it is, because you're just putting up a front. You're like, that's certainly what I was. I was like, I didn't know that I was, because I didn't know that I wasn't as funny as I would become. I was just like, I think I'm good. I've got, you know, straight white male delusional self-confidence. And even when audiences were like, I don't know about this, I was like, don't worry, I do. You know, my grandmother tells me that I'm funny, so don't you worry about anything. And so, you know, if you're learning comedy for public speaking, if you want to be confident in a different area of life, hopefully it's an area of life that you know, maybe it's that you have some knowledge, you have some skills, but you don't have the public speaking capacity. So you're not confident in your speaking, but once you learn how to speak, once you learn what to do in those situations, then you have the thing to be confident in. You have your talent, your skill, your work, your whatever it is that you are talking about. And so one other thing is, I have a friend who he's a teacher of some kind at a college in Australia. And he was telling me that he had to do a Zoom like lecture. And he was like, this is a weird thing. Like, it's kind of my first time doing this thing. You do a lot more public speaking than I do. Can you offer any advice? And one piece of advice that I offered is, like, talk about how it's weird. Don't try to ignore that. Don't try to be like, oh, well, I should make it seem like, and that's like, whenever I listen to Dan Savage and his podcast, The Savage Lovecast, a lot. And some of his people call in and they're like, I don't have a lot of experience, but it seems like everyone else my age is supposed to have a lot of experience. So should I try to fake it? And he's like, no, like, open with your, with the truth, with honesty, and you want somebody who, you know, will care about you for who you are and what you're offering. And because if you don't know what you're doing, but you pretend that you do, a lot of people might see through that anyway. And then they're like, why are you trying to trick me? It's not working at all. But if you're just like, hey, this is the truth, like, you can have even confidence in your inexperience. You can be like, look, I don't know what I'm doing. So be gentle, be kind, be helpful. Let me know. Tell me how I'm doing. How's my driving? And so I think that, I mean, where I've gotten to now after 18-ish years of doing comedy is I now know that I can write jokes about whatever I want. I can talk about whatever I want. And so now it's like much more valuable for me to talk about things that I care the most about, things that are like things that I think are the most funny and the most interesting and the most important and the most like relevant and the most present. And whereas in the beginning of my comedy career, before it was even a career, I was just like taking jokes as they came. It seemed like they were coming from wherever they were. I was like, well, this one and this one and this one. I tried them all regardless if they were about, you know, about anything. Some of them were about my life. Some of them were about social justice issues I care about. Some of them were about just like absurdity. Some of them were about pop culture, movies I like, movies I don't like. You know, I was just like, try everything, just like throw it all against the wall. And like now there's just, I know there's so much, I can't even throw it all against the wall. I'm just like, oh, I got to pick which of these things do I want to throw against the wall? Which of the ones do I want to stick? And so that is, I don't know. I don't even remember it so long ago what the question is that you asked, but something, if I remember correctly, it was something like, how do you remain true to yourself? And I feel like I'm becoming a truer version of myself through a process of doing and learning and trial and error. And because it's not like I was always this version of myself, like when I was younger, experienced, less of a comedian, like less of a, you know, as fully forming of a human being. So I hope that answers some of the question.
Yes, it definitely does. All right, we're going to stop for just a moment. So, because Mike has been, I want to make sure he gets some water. I want to make sure his throat is still up for the rest of the show. And if you're listening live tonight, which is September 21st, 2020, it's 8:25 p.m. Eastern Time, GMT minus 5. And you got a question or a comment for Mike, you know, you can always call in 646-716-9922, which is a toll-free call in the continental U.S. Blog Talk Radio assures me. 646-716-9922. Or for the people who, Mike, this is someplace we've all been before, when you're at a job or a place where you can't talk out loud, but you do have something to say, you can always send me a message on Facebook through Jennifer Modette Perry or Madam Perry Salon, either one, and I'll make sure to give it to him. And then right now, got a little message from my friends Charles, Ernie, and Shaq.
So, Chuck, talk to us about Fizdale being the Knicks' new coach. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I tell you right now, Ernie, it don't matter who's going to coach this team. They don't got no talent on it. And I don't really feel like talking
about
truth. I don't feel like talk about the Knicks right
you
now.
Want to talk about lunch?
No.
What would you like to talk about, Chuck?
See, Ernie, I've been listening to a podcast called Madam Perry Salon. And I think Jennifer Perry, she's a great host. I mean, she got all these bestseller authors, Rostov, all the comedians.
What about people you that don't have rings?
Here we go.
Real funny, Chuck. Real funny. But I think she's great, and I think people would love her show. She got a great laugh. She make the laugh come out of nowhere like an eagle come in there and just steal the whole show. It's a beautiful thing. It's not terrible.
You know, Mike, sometimes I think that's I've learned to be happy when somebody just says something's not terrible. It's not terrible like that, just like he did.
That's fair. I mean, that's a good place to start.
Yes, it is. And I want to talk to you. You've got three podcasts, The Faucet, Hang Out With Me, and Broccoli and Ice Cream.
Yes. So it's the newest podcast that I've created is called The Faucet, where I release at least a couple episodes a week whenever I feel like. And it's just me, just one person talking, a stream of consciousness flowing out of the faucet that is myself, the conduit, the vessel, whatever it is. I start talking and keep talking. Sometimes it's kind of like the thing that I was just talking about with how I started doing my comedy. Sometimes it will be about like a meaningful life experience that I've had recently. Sometimes it will be just sort of bouncing on trampolines of absurdist wordplay. And sometimes it'll be like some combination thereof. So that's The Faucet. Then for the past two and a half years, I've been putting out a podcast called Broccoli and Ice Cream, where it's me and one guest, and usually one guest. And I have a conversation with them. It's often another comedian, sometimes a writer, sometimes an activist, sometimes a politician once in a while. So just usually it's often a creative person, an artist, somebody who does some sort of work in the world, which I say is represented by broccoli, and who experiences joy in their life as represented by ice cream. So I have one conversation focused on the metaphorical broccoli of their life and another focused on the metaphorical ice cream. And each of those comes out about once a week. Also one for free, wherever you get free podcasts, and the other on Patreon. You can support me there. And then in 2012, my first podcast was born, and it was called Hang Out With Me. And there's like between 450, 500 episodes on iTunes, on where I've posted them. And I But I haven't really – I stopped making it in March, April of 2018, and that's when I started doing Broccoli and Ice Cream, kind of instead. I'm like, well, this is my podcast now, because Hang Out With Me was usually me and two friends just hanging out, and sometimes it would be meaningful, sometimes it would be funny, sometimes it would be both, sometimes it would be neither. And that was the that was the goal, just to have, like, a fun, like, loving conversation with like-minded or not like-minded, just like people who I knew and liked having conversations with. Often, again, lots of comedians and other, just sometimes just friends from life outside of comedy.
You've had people, and what I was looking to on Broccoli and Ice Cream, Judy Gold, Ken Jennings, and I see here that you've had Minori Hines, and she's a comedian. I've seen her perform. I was living in Asheville for a while, Asheville, North Carolina, and I've seen her there. Funny woman.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Minori is a dear friend. I think I met her when I was performing in Asheville in maybe like 2013 or thereabouts, something like that. And like, I just, we became friends, and I've just always been a fan of her as a human being and as a comedian. And so whenever I'm in a driving range of her, I'm always happy to be in a building when safe and healthy, doing comedy with her or hanging out, being friends for sure.
No.
And go for it.
So if I invite her to be on the show and she asks you, you're going to say, no, go for it. It's okay.
I will 100. I'll after we get off this call, I'll tell her that her name came up on the podcast, and we will, and I would recommend it.
Oh, good. Also, I see you had on there John Fugel sang in God's Unauthorized Fan Clubs, which reminds me, Wednesday night, my guest is Tony Keddie, who has a book called Republican Jesus.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, that sounds very fun. And I mean, I hope, depending on the context. But yeah, John is a fantastic comedic and just like literary, almost in his like encyclopedic knowledge of the Bible and politics. Like, I don't know how he does everything that he does, but it's impressive.
Well, yes, exactly. If I could remember the way he puts it and how he says, it's always the people who are out there saying, you know, the people who represent white supremacy are always the perfect examples that contradict that.
Oh, yes.
Those words, yeah. But anyway, we do have a call or someone visiting here in the Genie Bottle. If you don't mind, Mike Kaplan, comedian. And also, we want to make sure everybody knows that you're newest album, AKA, which is a scream. It's a riot. And I can listen to it over and over and over. And I have, is been submitted for a nomination for a Grammy. And I want to talk about that too before you get off. But if you would reach over to your left, if you don't mind, and part the beaded curtain, because somebody's going to come in here. It's
you got it.
It's one of our regular favorites here on Madame Perry Salon. It is Kenya. Kenya, come on in. Sit down.
Oh, thank you for inviting me in. So, let me get my hips in. Let me get the hips. Thank you, Mike.
Welcome.
Squeezing it in. So I am enjoying the show because I love comedians that are great storytellers. Like, to me, that's the key to a good joke. Or a comedy skit, is that how well do you tell the story? Can I keep up with it? And when you started talking to Jennifer Madame Perry about the time that you realized that you wanted to get married one day, and that's how you, and if I'm not mistaken, you were saying that that's how you approach maybe comedy or the things that you want to do in life is by first seeing it and then working all the details out later.
Yes, I will say that that is 100%. I think you got the message of the story. I will say that as as the 12-year-old version of me in the story, I did not have the foresight. I now look back and would tell anyone if they were looking for advice on how to do anything. Like, there's some people who are like, how do I do everything? How do I do this big thing? You're like, well, have you thought about starting with the smallest one thing, the smallest something, the smallest step towards it?
Exactly.
And they're like, no, I don't want to do one thing. I want to do everything. And so I was that unaware person at the beginning of it. And so I'm still, in some ways, I'm sure, an unaware person that has yet to discover all that I'll learn in the next several, I hope, decades of my life. But if you want to do something, if you know what you want to do, that's already wonderful. What a gift to have an idea of, if you're a child, what you want to be when you grow up, what you want to do. As an adult, to have an idea of what you want to be and what you want to do as an adult right now or later. And I think one of the additionally great options for determining what you want to do and how to do it is, look at what you have done and what you have enjoyed doing, what you have been good at. And if there's any sort of confluence of all those things, be like, well, how do you make that happen again? When did you achieve something, anything? When did you feel the way that you wanted to feel? And can you, in the language of what we're talking about here, bottle that?
Yes, definitely. I agree with you totally. And I have a saying sort of close to what you were saying with the little things. And I'm always telling my kids that in order to get the big things, because I'm spiritual, but I just believe that the universe gives you what you can handle. And the more you can handle, the more it gives to you. So the least you can handle, and that you've shown an example of, like, if you can't handle the little things, trust me, you cannot handle the big things. So kind of start with the little things.
Definitely. I like the idea. I mean, we can only, if you want to, let's say you're struggling with something like, I want to do, let's say it's an addiction, let's say it's alcoholism. If you're like, thinking about it, I want to be sober for the rest of my life. That might not be the easiest way to make it happen, as opposed to being like, let me try one day. Let me try 1 hour. Let me try
exactly
1 minute.
Yes.
One little thing at a time.
Very good. Well, I am enjoying the show. I love the conversation you guys got going, and I was just kind of listening to it, thinking about the broccoli and ice cream show, and just hang out with me. And I'm trying to figure out how to get to those shows to listen to them. Which podcasts are they on, and is it just that name? Or is it something else to go along with it?
If I understand your question correctly, and you want to know how to listen to my podcasts or where to get them or how?
Yes, basically, yes.
Wonderful. Well, if you listen to podcasts, then wherever you can get them, most places anywhere. I think they're on Spotify. I think they're on SoundCloud. They're definitely on Apple Podcasts. Like, if you go into any pod directory and that you might use, or if you just search the name Broccoli and Ice Cream and my name, or The Faucet and my name. The thing about Hang Out With Me that I wanted to say real quick is, I stopped creating them in 2018 and started making these other podcasts. I then just a month or two ago realized that there are still people regularly downloading the episodes that exist of Hang Out With Me. Even 6 years, sorry, 2 years after I stopped making them at all. So I started releasing a couple short ones here and there, just mostly asking, who are you and why are you still here and why aren't you listening to my podcast? So you can listen to any and all of them, but mostly Hang Out With Me now is dedicated to confusedly, almost mock berating people for listening to a podcast that's over instead of a podcast that's still going.
That's still going, exactly. I'll check it out. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you so much. What a delightful conversation you've been a part of.
Thank you. You guys are great. Keep it up.
Okay. All right. Oh, gosh. And let's talk to, for people who want to know, and of course, I will be sharing how to listen to Mike's podcast, how to buy his albums, and everything Mike Kaplan that you could possibly want to get on all of my social media for Madam Perry Salon as well as Jennifer Perry. But the website, and thank you for making this so simple, the website is simply Mike, M-Y-Q, Kaplan, KAPLAN.com, and it's a great website. It's easy to navigate. It's got everything across the top, a.k.a. your newest album, and then click buy so you can buy everything, tour where you can see. Then there's a broccoli, hang,
thank you.
Blog, watch, listen. It's so well done. That's all you got to do is a couple of clicks, and you've got it with you to carry with you all the time.
Well, I appreciate that. I think also, if I'm not mistaken, that my website will be updated soon as well. There's a new, even, I think, more colorful version of it coming. So keep your eyes on it, and it should be, I think, hopefully just as easy to navigate, if not more so. But, yeah, you can definitely get all of my things there or wherever you wish.
All right. And let's see. Sorry, the next show is a dog fight. I know you think I had true crime author Matt Phelps, M. William Phelps on. I don't know if you've heard of him. Just a moment.
Oh, sure.
These corgis can be extortionists. You know, it's like, well, it'd be a shame if your show got messed up and they couldn't hear. Got any treats hanging around? Yeah, they're like little mafia dogs.
Sure.
It'd be a shame if nobody could hear your guests. So, I have no idea where I was. Oh, Matt Phelps. He's a true crime writer.
Yes.
He's got some television shows on ID Discovery and then one long series he followed with somebody. And he was on one night, and the dogs got to bark, and I think I had to push one out the door, and she made a little sound like she was hurt, but it was her feelings that were hurt. And he wanted to stop the whole show and make sure that no animals were being injured during the show, and he just would not let it go. So I think he thought because I broadcast from Atlanta that this is Michael Vick's house, but it's not. So
I hear you. I like that. I'm glad that it sounded like the dog, you know, we're just doing regular old dog barking.
Dog, yes. Dog, yeah, they're just being dog things. Okay, good. All right. I don't need any trouble. I don't look for trouble. I don't need trouble. Mike Kaplan, your newest album, AKA, is tell us about the Grammy and what we can do with the hashtag that we can give that everybody will.
Very kind of you to ask and offer. So the album came out earlier this year. It's called AKA. You can, I mean, number one, the thing that anyone can do and I'd love for you to do is listen to it. You can get it anywhere that you would normally get, you know, music or comedy albums. You can download it. You can stream it. You can even get a physical copy from my record label, Blonde Medicine. If you go to blondemedicine.com/AKA, that'll let you know so many ways to get it, to listen. And then also, if you like it, which I hope you do, you can help spread the word about it. Right now, it has been considered to be nominated for a Grammy, which is, as you know, just an honor to be submitted, to be considered to be nominated. And if you ask my father, I've already won, or at least I've already been nominated, which I haven't. He told his brother, I got a message from my aunt and uncle. They're like, we heard that you were nominated for an Emmy. And I'm like, that's not even the award. But it's a way that you can help, if you wish, is I have posted on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook various just like posts saying, letting people know that the album exists and has been submitted to the Grammys. And there's all kinds of hashtags like hashtag Grammys, Grammy, or Grammike, which is just Grammy with Mike, the way I spell it at the end. Hashtag for your consideration, hashtag Recording Academy. And you can use all of those to help. If you're a voter, If you're a voter for the Grammys, then you can listen and consider voting for it. If you know a voter, you can tell them. And if you don't, you can just tell anyone that you want. Tell everyone that you think might be interested in listening, considering, and helping spread the word as such.
All right. Well, I've let my Grammy membership lapse the last couple of years. I was a nominating member, not a voting member, but I still have a lot of friends that are, and we'll be sharing that. And I am so excited for you. I just think, yeah, this is going to be great.
Well, I really appreciate it.
Very excited for you. This is going to, you got to come back on if you had a good time, and I hope you did, because we certainly love having you here. Then we'll just have to talk about it and the next one coming up. And by the way, while you still, because once you're gone, nobody's going to listen. So Wednesday night, Tony Ketty, he is a scholar, professor. His specialties, I think, are politics and economics back in the biblical times. And funny, in this book, Republican Jesus, he pretty much leads with the fact that Jesus was not, he was not white and blue-eyed. I don't know where he gets this, but I think it's a great book. I'm halfway through reading it, and I think everybody's going to, you're going to feel one way or another about it, but I'm excited to have him on Wednesday. And I'm excited for Mike Kaplan and AKA, and big love to you and yours and Blonde Medicine and your whole team. Anything?
Thank you.
We're here
the
for you, Mike Kaplan.
The same appreciated, reciprocated. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure, and I'll be thrilled to
Goodbye,
Linda.
All right. Thanks again, Mike. Everybody,
thank you.
Well,